Blog Talk Radio.
Hello and welcome again to Open Government Radio. My name is Steve Buckley. I'm your host. And today is Tuesday, May 18th. It's 2 p.m. Eastern Time, and you'll be able to follow along on today's show by, if you like, you can just listen. But, of course, if you want to follow along on the web, then you can do that at the same time so you can see what documents and websites we'll be talking about. All you have to do is go to my blog, which is ustransparency.com. All one word, ustransparency.com. And you will see there that today's guest, scheduled guest, was Lisa Schlosser from the Environmental Protection Agency. Unfortunately, there's been a change in plans, and Lisa was not able to be the guest today, but we have a replacement for her. Her replacement is John Moses, who's the director from the EPA, and he's director of the Communications Strategies Division with EPA's Office of Environmental Information. So he works within Lisa Schlosser's department and is filling in for her. He, I noticed a typo here already. I put Mrs. Moses, but that's wrong, of course. Mr. Moses was the evaluator for EPA's self-evaluation a few weeks ago of its open government plan, and there's a link to that, but we'll get to that later. I did want to point out that a few things before we turn to Mr. Moses. If you scroll down at on the blog there, you'll see a list of handy links there, and I just wanted to point out that there will be a another Open Government Directive workshop. You'll see that is link number 7 in the list there. That will be number 5 in the series. We started these back in November. I've been involved, but the primary organizer behind that is Lucas Chiaffi. And you can click there and find more information about what will be happening on May 24th, this coming, that will be next Monday, May 24th, in the afternoon. It's only half a day from 1:30, from 1 to 4:30. And if you're arriving early for, I guess, the Open Government or Gov2O Expo is starting the next day and so forth and so on. So that might be for people who want to warm up their Open Government muscles and brains. They might want to attend that ahead of time. And it's free. The and next week's guest is, you see there, number 8, is Eugene Huang, who's Special Advisor to Chief Technology Officer Anish Chopra in the White House Office of Science and Technology Policy. So, anyway, and now we will turn to Mr. Moses, and we will check here to see if he is available. John Moses, are you there?
Yes, I'm here.
Okay, great. I'm so glad you could fill in for Lisa at the last minute or last hour or so. You have been involved. Can you give us some idea about you? I know you've been involved, of course, with the Open Government Plan, its development, and so forth. Maybe you can give us an idea of your background and how you ended up where you are today.
Sure.
Go back a few years where you're, give us a sense of your background and, you know, how you ended up at EPA and how you ended up in that office and so forth.
Well, I've been at EPA since 1992, and I've been working on environmental information and technology ever since then. I'm a charter member of the Office of Environmental Information, which was established about 10 years ago, a little more than 10 years ago. And I've been working on various open government issues even before they're called open government. For many years, I directed the e-rulemaking program, which started as one of the e-government programs and is also cross-listed in the Open Government Directive as one of the transparency initiatives, along with data.gov and recovery.gov and things like that. So I've got
that,
a lot
what
of experience.
What was that name again? I'm sorry. Regulations.gov.
It's the e-rulemaking
Regulations.
Program.
Regulations.gov. Okay. Gotcha.
Right.
Go ahead. I'm sorry.
And so I've been doing that for a number of years. And prior to my work in OEI, I worked on developing different technologies and information to provide environmental conditions and trends for public access in a predecessor organization. So I've been doing this for probably 10 or 15 years now. And my organization under LISA oversees EPA's FOIA and privacy programs, along with supporting the agency's rulemaking docket processing and, of course, the rulemaking, the e-rulemaking program and its federal-wide support for agencies and regulations.gov.
Oh, okay. So as a matter of fact, well, there's a link to the office there, but before we click on that, and I had a couple questions about that. But so you're by training, did you go to college to become an environmental person, or how did you end up at EPA? I'm always curious about how people end up in government. So,
well, I have a master's in regional planning from Cornell University, and so that's basically a combination of public policy, kind of architecture and land use design, and economics. And so when I came to Washington, I've worked a couple places prior to EPA. I've worked in the private sector in consulting and nonprofit research as well. So I've been a couple different places before I came to EPA, and I was interested in federal service, and obviously environmental protection issues are something that are important to me, and making a difference to improve how we all can live is critical that motivates me at work.
Well, and it sounds like, I mean, when regional planning and so forth, I mean, that certainly involves some element of public participation, I would imagine. So it sounds like you actually are using a college degree.
You could say that, I guess so.
Yeah. Sometimes we wonder after we get out of college, say, hey, man, we're going to use any of that stuff. And so actually it sounds like you have for whatever reasons, are actually using, involved in that area. So that must be very satisfying in that sense. Before we start talking about the open government plan, which I know you're very much involved in developing it, I do have a link there on the blog here where to the LISA's the Office of Environmental Information, which you work within, and which I mentioned also regulations.gov. But if I'd like to pull up, I just clicked on that. The Office of Environmental Information, and I think, let's see here, there's a page that comes up there, and it says, at the very top, of course, it says Office of Environmental Information, and then it gives the different things that you were, some of the different things that you were just mentioning, but I guess your division is the Freedom of Information Act. Is that what you were saying?
Yes.
That's one of the sections here. So your office handles all of the FOIA requests, then?
Well, my organization facilitates and tracks them. They go out to the subject matter experts, whether in the regions or in EPA headquarters program offices, and then they're fulfilled at that level. And then we track them. My organization sets the policy and procedures and then provides reporting back to Department of Justice, which oversees the FOIA program for the government.
Okay, so you oversee it within EPA, that is?
Yes.
To make sure that people get answers and that there's the backlog, hopefully, is getting a FOIA request is being reduced or, or what's happening with the backlog? I guess there was a backlog at EPA.
Historically, there's been a backlog. About 2001, I don't have the stats in front of me, they had 15,000, 20,000 FOIA requests in backlog, and it's been reduced down to a few hundred, which with when the agency's getting 10,000 to 15,000 FOIA requests a year is a markedly low number. So the EPA's FOIA officer and the FOIA team in headquarters in the regions and then all the subject matter experts had really worked very diligently over the last number of years to reduce that historic backlog down to very, very low levels, especially when you look across the entire federal government. So EPA's FOIA program is generally considered a model for federal agencies.
Oh, okay. So it had, you said it had been as much as at some time as much as 20,000, I guess? Is that what you said?
Yeah, I think that was 2001.
Uh-huh. And then they handed it to you, and you did a better job?
No, I wish I could take credit. It happened to my predecessors and those folks. I was lucky to come into a well-running machine and an extremely well-run organization. So I wish I could take credit, but I can't.
Oh, okay. Well, it's just a coincidence that it had, well, whatever. That now you've gone from 20,000 to like a few hundred. Is that what you're saying?
Yeah, I'm looking at the numbers now. It was 23,000 in 2001, and as of the end of 2009, it was 332. And in fact, so that's 96% of all new requests were responded to within the 20-day statutory deadlines. So it's
96% within. Really?
20
within
days.
I guess you said 20 days is the mandated or what they're supposed to do.
Right. Unless there's an extension or some other circumstance, yes.
Oh, okay. Well, then that definitely, because the sense, and I'm Department of Justice, I guess, probably has something online somewhere about how the various agencies are doing, but the sense I had is that, that yes, most agencies have more than aren't doing quite as well as 96% within 20 days. So must be very encouraging, or the work you're doing there must be encouraging to the people in your own organization. And maybe other agencies are jealous. So in any event, but before we go on, and I was going to ask this later, but as long as we're touching on that, do you ever ask? Or do the people who put in the FOIA requests ever get an opportunity to provide feedback like, yes, this is what I was looking for, or no, this is what I was looking for? I mean, I suppose one was pessimistic or whatever. They say, oh, yeah, they just reply and just give them some junk back, and then they go, oh, you know, finish that one, you know. Do you understand what I'm saying? Is there any way of knowing whether people are have any sense of whether the customer satisfaction, I guess, you know, how are we doing? Was that what you wanted or something like that? Or does anybody do that?
Well, I can't speak for other agencies. I do know that EPA's FOIA program, especially the FOIA officer, they do occasionally meet with frequent requesters. Often it's from large news organizations, and they do ask how their performance and get their level of satisfaction, and generally it's been fairly positive. In fact, they've often kind of written complimentary notes back to the program, so occasionally we'll get a letter back saying, hey, thank you for providing this, or wow, I didn't realize, you know, you in doing this you've saved me time or money, etc. One notable example is a number of years ago, some requesters were asking for information on certifications of engines for export. So when vehicles are exported, they need a certain certification, and that's, of course, in a database in the agency. And previously, people would have to request those, and they'd go to the part of the agency that has that information. They'd print them off and provide them back. And then our FOIA officer said, well, wait a minute. If this is a database, why don't we just make it live? So they made it live, and they have heard from vehicle exporters saying that it has saved them thousands of dollars by being able just to click on the FOIA website and just identify and print out the certification that they need. And that's the kind of things we're continuing to look at, is look at the number of most frequently requested types of information and figure out ways that we can provide that to the public so that they don't have to request it anymore, so they can just find it and then either download it or print it off or whatever is the best way for them to access the information that they frequently request.
Mm-hmm. So that the default is online, so to speak. Is that it?
Yes.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think that that's the sense I get is that, yeah, why play 20 questions about where information is if you can put it online and in an easy way, an easy accessible way to make it findable without having to involve the bureaucrats. Well, that must be so I guess, yeah, there was some, I guess, spot surveys done then, and I'm, like I said, maybe getting ahead of myself as far as asking about the Open Government Plan, but it's like I said, so is that, is there something actually in the plan that talks about, that mentions the idea of, you know, quality control or quality assurance, or whatever you want to call it, to see if, you know, if it's more than occasional or not random, I guess it would be considered random surveys or select, do you see that going a little bit further so that there are surveys?
Or well, EPA's website uses the very widely distributed American Customer Satisfaction Survey Index, ACSI, and if you click on EPA's website, you'll often at random be prompted by a request if you want to fill out a survey on how satisfied you are with the website and what you're finding. And then some of the other programs also have that as well. So if you're going through the FOIA program, you may get prompted at a random timetable, and you can provide your satisfaction of how satisfied you are with that information or dissatisfied that, for that matter. The rulemaking program on regulations.gov also uses that same tool and also randomly will prompt the members of the public who are using that application or that website and able to provide information on their satisfaction, what they're looking for, if they'd like to describe the kind of organization or what they represent. Are you a member of the general public? Are you someone from a large business? Are you an academic or whatever?
Mm-hmm. And that's done through 4C results, isn't it?
Yes.
Yeah, we had Dave Luan from 4C Results back in February on the program, and he was explaining, how the online website survey was providing a lot of information about whether or not people were getting the information, you know, which of course is very virtually the same thing as, you know, the idea of transparency, because if people can't find what they're looking for and it's not clear to them what's going on, then that kind of defeats the whole thing besides as far as making things more transparent to the citizenry. But, that's an issue. The whole idea of getting a handle on what's working and what isn't is, and as a former bureaucrat myself, the idea is need some type of data proof that things are working the way you want them to work, and it's not just a subjective evaluation, because we're all subjective animals and we like to think we're doing a good job, but unless we all have data, then you don't really know. Well, that's good to hear that you're using 4C results then, and I wasn't aware of that. And as long as we're on this page about regulations.gov, that's always been something, I mean, like I said, as a former bureaucrat, I know what the Federal Register is and how regulations on, you know, for instance, EPA has environmental regulations, water quality, air quality, what to do with hazardous waste, where to put it, how to handle it, you know, what kind of containers, so forth and so on. And these are the things that not just private companies, but the federal government has to comply with. Everybody has to comply with EPA regulations, even EPA. But most people aren't aware of the process for doing that EPA just doesn't wham fall out of the sky and say, okay, here's the new regulations for drinking water quality. And we've raised it from 3 parts per million of mercury or whatever to 2 parts per million, or, you know, and then it just falls. I think they don't understand that federal agencies like EPA propose things and ask for comments from the public and then take that into consideration. You would think from all this talk about collaboration and participation and transparency that this was a totally new thing and that federal agencies hadn't done anything of this sort before. But so it's kind of, hopefully more people will realize the things that have been going on for years and years and years. So do you find that to be the case? People are discovering for the first time that, you know, like under regulations.gov, that, oh, well, we've been asking for comments for years. Does that, do you ever meet people like that who don't appreciate the fact that there has been this, albeit clunky kind of way of doing it? But what's your sense from working with regulations.gov and the regulation making as far as people's understanding of how that all works?
Well, I think most people, especially once you get further and further away from the Beltway, don't appreciate the impact that regulatory action has on them, and that the statutes that are passed often don't directly impact, but they have to go through a regulatory process before they actually impact people and organizations and companies on the ground. So that's certainly one. And so most of them aren't aware of the fact, the regulatory process, and that it's open to them and it's explicitly designed to solicit their feedback and input. And then the second is, within the first couple of years of launching regulations.gov, we also saw somewhat of a demographic split in terms of age, that when probably within the first year it was deployed, it was being shared with different folks around Washington, and we heard back from different constituent groups, nonprofit groups, trade associations, businesses that often follow and track these things. And what we heard was, from the younger staff, the comment was, wasn't it always this way? Because the question was, hey, what do you think of this new website that allows any person, any place, any time to look at all federal regulations and submit comments? And then that was their responses. They were kind of surprised that it hadn't been that way for a long time, or if not since the early days of the Internet. And we said, no, it just was launched. So that was kind of a surprise. And then the rest of us who certainly predate the Internet, at least widespread the World Wide Web and its use, kind of remember the old days of going to the basement of some federal office building anywhere in Metro D.C. between, you know, whatever set hours it's open for business, and trying to track down through paper files what's going on and how to respond. So it has transformed the process and really opened it up for the average person at their convenience in any time, any place, to get involved, to learn about what's going on, to read other people's comments, and then submit comments if they so choose.
Mm-hmm. And there is, for those of you who are following along, if you do click on regulations.gov, and of course that's easy to spell out, you don't have to look for it on the blog, it's like what it sounds, regulations.gov. There's a neat little video right on that homepage there, and I haven't seen the video, so I don't know, but hopefully it's something short and understandable. So the idea that certainly makes it, regulations can be a pretty dry subject, so I'm glad to see that you have something there that's a little more along the lines of eye candy, so that people can, regulations for dummies, or, you know, something like that, that explain to them on their level how regulations, you know, are born, and they just don't fall out of the sky, and so forth and so on. So that's very interesting to see. The idea of collaborating with the public, I mean, sometimes I see with all this open government, it seems that it goes right from collaboration to final product, like the Open Government Directive. There was a big online dialogue last summer that the White House put on, and then it was quiet for like 5 months, and then the Open Government Directive came out in December. And typically, though, I guess, you know, it's usually the people come out with a draft, or the people in the government come out with a draft or a proposal, and then it's put out for comment, and then you comment on that, and then they come out with the final product. I used to write environmental impact statements, and I found that I much prefer to, rather than write them myself, I prefer to comment on other people's. I'd rather be a reviewer than a doer. It's much easier, and I think it might actually work better. But so I think is your sense that they're still trying to figure out this, you know, what's the best way of collaborating, you know, versus commenting versus, you know, is it possible to be involve people too early in the process?
I don't know if you can involve people too early in the process, but I know that technology is rapidly evolving from posting a draft, if you will, as you described, whether that's on the internet or the old days of handing around a piece of paper and you mark it with a pen. It's evolving pretty rapidly in terms of ratings, in terms of wikis, in terms of blogs, in terms of tagging and categorization. So there's a whole variety of ways that the public and different companies and organizations are coming up with ways to interact. And I think as we see those tools mature, and I think as people adjust to which tools seem to work better in different circumstances, I think we'll see, you know, tool X works for process X and tool Y seems to be works better for process Y or something like that. I still think it's somewhat early. On the other hand, I'm very encouraged by the support across the administration to try different methodologies and to experiment with what works best with the public and how to involve them. And they had a very strong support and encouragement to use interactive tools to provide the public the ability to submit ideas and comments and suggestions for what's appropriate for open government, what should be in plans, to start giving feedback, to have face-to-face meetings. So it's kind of the new and the old was employed in this whole process.
Oh, yeah. Mm. Yeah, and I mean, I guess what it all comes down to, I guess, is the idea of providing feedback, even if that involves feedback on the new way of obtaining feedback. So,
right.
For instance, the idea scale platform that EPA and most other agencies used for getting their, you know, for soliciting ideas for open government should at some point be, you know, step back from that and say, okay, so for those people who use this, what did you like about it and what didn't you like about it, and, you know, so forth and so on, I guess. And the danger is, of course, that, you know, you have, when do I stop asking for feedback on the feedback on the feedback? So you get into a
Well, I'd say it's more than just feedback on the feedback. I would also say, Stephen, that some of the most valuable things that we found in the IdeaScale process or the whole public input process was requests for information, process changes, things like that, which we either took action and put in place. One of our top vote getters at EPA was interest in keeping the IdeaScale open so they could, the public could continue to provide us input and ideas. And so we did that. Another was requesting information on the Toxics Release Inventory or the TSCA database, excuse me. And so we actually provided public access to that database as a result. Other components or ideas suggested by the public included video casting and archive of rulemakings to be broadcast via the web. And since I also have the opportunity and privilege to work with the rulemaking program, that program actually, as you saw and mentioned, supports videos. So as agencies start developing videos explaining what they're doing, we post those on the site, and eRulemakingRegulations.gov has a YouTube channel that people can look at those. For instance, about a month ago, maybe a little more than that, the Let's Move campaign, which is a tri-governmental agency effort at HHS, Department of Education, and USDA, looking at nutrition and obesity and children's health, we hosted their video and their comment process on regulations.gov. So we've actually seen direct impact and response to what the public is looking for. So it just gives us, it's far more than just feedback on the feedback. In fact, if you look at some of the idea scale ideas, especially the most prominent vote getters, that they're often for, I'd like to learn about this kind of information, or I'd like to have this opportunity, and which is pretty encouraging. So it's giving us tangible, direct feedback on what the agency can do to reach out to the American public.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Well, I'm certainly you've been very busy doing that, and it looks like there's very many promising ideas that are there. So I guess you probably have the good part is, I think that it sounds like you have a wealth of ideas that people gave, which is, you know, the opposite of that is that nobody shows up and you don't get anything. So let me just take a break here and we'll go to some of the comments if you scroll down. I'm Steve Buckley. This is Open Government Radio. Our guest today is John Moses from the Office of Environmental Information at the Environmental Protection Agency. And if you're following along with us, we're at ustransparency.com. Today's posting, you'll see there, has a number of links about EPA and the programs that within Mr. Moses' office, regulations.gov being one of those. But let's scroll down and look at some of the comments that people have provided. I know I told people that if they weren't comfortable within the bureaucracy raising them through traditional channels, that's one of the reasons for creating Open Government Radio, was perhaps another way to ask for clarification on open government within an organization like EPA. And do you see those comments there, John? I'll read them for people who aren't looking at a computer right now, but I just want to make sure we're looking at the same things. Do you see the down at the bottom of my posting, there's a link for comments?
Let's see. I see it at the bottom under people who listen to this also like, there's a section on comments.
Oh, you're looking at... oh, okay. No, are you at U.S. Transparency?
Oh, let me try that.
I'm assuming your computer's faster than mine. I'm already there, but I need a new computer pretty soon.
The ustransparency.com?
Yeah, if you go there, you'll see... some of the comments. I just wanted to make sure you were looking at the same thing I'm looking at rather than having me just read them off.
Sure. Yeah, I'm here.
Okay. And so there's three comments there. Do you see the one by the first one? I'll just start at the top and go down. But Michael S., do you see that one?
I am still, let's see.
Right at the bottom of the posting for today's show, there's a green box with comments. If you click on that.
I wonder if it was on the screen I was on before. Blog Talk Radio?
No, it's not on Blog Talk Radio. U.S. Transparency is a blog format. It's on, you know,
right.
Blogspot. And so
why don't you just go ahead and read it?
Anyway, Michael S. says, he's talking about a particular case here, but I don't want to spend too much time. But the state of Colorado and many other states have entered into an agreement with the EPA and the NRC to allow state agencies to be the final determinant on uranium/nuclear issues. The state of Colorado and therefore the federal government have turned that oversight and enforcement over to the Colorado Department of Public Health and Environment. But that agency is partially funded by the private sector and acts as if their role is to refer questions back to the private sector and essentially rubber stamp applications for uranium mining, milling, transportation, economic impact, and storage. No one is doing an EIS, meaning an environmental impact statement. No one is doing an EIS or a socioeconomic analysis or even engaging the stakeholders in a particular instance now being steamrolled in Montrose County in Colorado. The location is very close in close proximity to an existing EPA Superfund cleanup site where the entire town of Uravan, Colorado, that had to be removed in its entirety. How do we get the EPA to engage? Now, it sounds like the main thing here would be to figure out which agency is primarily responsible for it. But, and I don't mean to put you on the spot as far as what, you know, having all the answers to this particular case that he's, that Michael is talking about, but if you were to perhaps point Michael in the right direction, what might be the best place to go? Or, you know, is it EPA, is it the state, or, you know, how would you try to get Michael hooked up with whoever is supposed to be handling the ball on a particular environmental project, particularly, I guess, this one being involving the NRC as well? Any thoughts there?
And he was talking about a uranium mine? Or was it
that will allow state agencies? It sounds like perhaps EPA and or the federal government, and the, meaning EPA and the NRC, will, and it could be Department of Energy. I mean, I used to work there, so this sounds a lot like that. But if the federal government has delegated certain aspects, they can't delegate the whole thing because they need to oversee it. But if they've delegated certain environmental aspects to the state, which, you know, whether it's uranium mining or wastewater treatment, I mean, basically, isn't that, that's what my understanding is, that what EPA does is that a lot of this is handled by states or delegated to them. But is there some place perhaps at EPA to start to find out, you know, start at the top and find out who's delegated what aspects? Is there an office in EPA where,
sure,
like an ombudsman?
Well, in terms
or
of nuclear issues, the Nuclear Regulatory Commission, NRC, as you described, oversees nuclear power plants. In terms of uranium mining, I'm guessing the Minerals Management Service at the Department of Interior. EPA's Office of Air and Radiation also has a component, but I'm, it's probably worth contacting the, if you're in the state of Colorado, EPA's regional office is located in Denver. It's the Region 8 office, and that would be a person I'd probably try to contact. I'd probably go to the web. I would check the EPA regional office for that. In fact, I can just check right now, and one might want to clarify and call them, and if they didn't know offhand, they could probably refer you to the other counterpart federal agencies. And the EPA regional office, their phone number, the general number is 303-312-6312, and they also have an 800 number, and that'd be one place to start.
Mm-hmm. Okay. And it sounds, and this is not unusual, of course, even for people who work in government, to call up an agency and say, oh, that's their responsibility, you know, get the runaround and so forth. So is there perhaps somebody, if they totally were pulling their hair out and lost, is there somebody at EPA headquarters who perhaps, if they feel they're not getting the satisfaction from the regional office, is there anybody, like I said, is there some anything like an ombudsman or anything like that that people just say, hey, I don't understand. It's not clear to me who's handling what. I mean, as a last resort, is there anything like that?
Sure, and they're also
at EBA headquarters.
There are folks who can handle that. They're also referring to the fact that it could be a Superfund issue, or they're referring to it. And I'm just checking that right now for the Superfund sites. One would be to contact the Superfund coordinator in the region, and they could probably help, because if it's adjacent to or related to a Superfund site, then because they're saying it's in very close proximity, so whether or not it's within the boundaries of the current or future Superfund site would be worth looking into that.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Well, don't spend too much time on that one, but that sounds, the whole idea, if it's that much easier, the whole idea I know with making open government is to make it more, transparency being just another word for clarity, and the idea that making websites and information easier to understand and easy, who's in charge of what and so forth. And I understand sometimes the bureaucrats have a tendency not to want you to understand. I understand it's better to be a faceless bureaucrat than one whose name is in the paper. So anyway, the next one says, many of EPA's, this is anonymous, many of EPA's senior managers are still wary of the use and risks of using social media like blogs, etc. How do you plan to change the mix of incentives and disincentives so that those senior managers will become more comfortable with the use of these tools?
Well, that's a great question. It's something that we addressed in the cross-EPA Open Government Workgroup. First and foremost, the agency issued an interim policy on the use of social media, and it's available and actually cited in the Open Government Plan as well for employees to understand that. I think the second piece is collectively this is a transitional time. Some of these social media tools are fairly new, and adjusting to how they can be used to further our work and our day-to-day mission to protect human health and the environment is something that I think different parts of the agency are adjusting to, how to best use them. Just like when other technologies like email came online, it took some time to adjust to it in terms of incentives and disincentives. I think one of the components in terms of social media is to ensure that it's compliant with the agency's mission and supporting what we're ultimately trying to achieve, and that's always something that, it just like in any other work, it's often common sense to check with your supervisors and to the extent that they're comfortable and what you're conveying and saying. And as I think as experience and skill, along with any kind of new skill or procedure, the level of comfort is going to increase.
Mm-hmm. As people use it and see that it's not a problem and they're not as concerned that it's
right.
going to come back and bite them in the ass, so to speak. So if someone wanted to read more about that, you said it's in the Open Government Plan?
Well, there's actually a social media policy that the agency has. And,
I'm looking at, so if people were to go to, is it on epa.gov/open?
Let me see.
There's a lot of information I'm pointing out to anyone who's listening. If they want, if they go to epa.gov/open, there's just a lot of information, worthwhile information on that page. And you said it's a policy, but the other... That's the other thing. If there's so much information on a page that sometimes it's hard to find it. But
absolutely.
If there was something in the Open Government Plan, is there a keyword that they would look for if they wanted to do a search of the Open Government Plan?
Does it touch on that? Yeah, they should probably be able to try social media.
Social media, uh-huh. Mm-hmm. Okay. Let's see real quick if I can.
For instance, the regulations.gov exchange tool uses various social media tools.
I'm sorry, can you say that again, please?
The regulations.gov exchange platform, which was launched last May, expressly to support social media capabilities for the rulemaking process.
Oh, so they went to regulations.gov and did a keyword search of social media?
Right. Also, if they look on page 29 of the plan, there's reference to EPA social media policies at epa.gov/epahome/socialmedia.html.
Mm-hmm.
And that's a whole section.
Let's see. Mine skips from page 26 to page 33. But apparently, people can go there and they can zero in on that if they go to the Open Government Plan for EPA and then do a word search of social media. I'm sure they'll be able to find it. Okay. And
well, they can also just go to the website at www.epa.gov/epahome/socialmedia.html.
Okay. Got it. And let's see, it's about quarter of here now. The hour always goes so fast. But let me look real quick at the last comment we have here. Let's see. Another anonymous comment says, what outcome, not just countable output? Let's see, they put some dashes here. What outcome measures has EPA decided to use? And then in between they put, not just countable output. And there's another question. Do you know what other departments, agencies plan to use? I guess they're referring to the measures. Will OMB establish a set of common measures to enable comparison, I guess, between agencies? And if so, how does OMB plan to do this? So, of course, you know, you're not in OMB, but do you have a sense of, let's back up a little bit before we talk about, let's just talk about EPA. The Open Government Plan does talk about ways to measure how successful. I know I've seen it, but I'll toss the ball to you. There's a section there about in the Open Government Plan about measures, and I guess people can follow. They can find that too by going to if they're in the Open Government Plan and just do measure. I believe it'll come up in that way. But I did see that there, and I know you do have measures. Some agencies I noticed don't have any measures, and they didn't. When they evaluated themselves, I think they admitted that they didn't. But when you were the evaluator, you said you did, and I did see some there. So do you see yourself using those measures and other measures? Or, I mean, you know, rather than having 30 agencies coming up with 30 different measures, I know there's an interagency group. Has that been a discussion about how to have common measures?
Oh, absolutely. Well, it's kind of a joint process that we're also looking for public feedback. I mean, there are lots of different measures. We talked about the American Customer Satisfaction Index. That's one kind of measure that we do and plan to continue using. In addition, there are different measures the public can help us come up with. And some of those we're still further working on refining, and we'll see additional measures of how we assess our progress when we start issuing the Strategic Data Action Plan. OMB actually did something that was and the Office of Open Government that was fairly clever. They actually asked all the agencies to do a self-assessment, and I know you're aware of that. And when the agencies did a self-assessment, we looked at what the plan was, and we looked at a common set of criteria. So getting back to the blogger's question, they did have a set of common measures to enable comparison. We did a self-assessment, as did the other, I believe there are 28 agencies or entities in the federal government. And then, of course, Patrice McDermott and others did their own independent assessment as well, according to their criteria. So I think there's a lot of different ways to compare and contrast agencies and their performance. EPA took a fairly conservative approach when we did our own self-assessment, and we accorded four items that we gave ourselves a yellow rating that we could continue to work on or we think we can do better. And the other ones we designate as green. And we were very pleased to see the assessments that the external groups came out with, that we tied with NASA for the top score, 59 out of 60. And then when we added the bonus criteria, we kept up as best as we could with NASA. They did outstandingly, and we thought we did too. And we got the second highest score when you added in the external group's bonus scores. So we're pretty pleased with how we did with our plan, but we still have a lot of work that we want to accomplish and continue to increase the transparency and openness within the agency. Part of the challenge we had was the agency has a number of statutes and a strong history and background in openness and transparency. So sometimes it can be even more of a challenge for an organization that already is fairly open and transparent to look at what's the next on the horizon. You know, the agency has had a national leading FOIA program since last year. We provide FOIA requesters a tracking mechanism so they can check what's the status online. We're providing more and more information that's frequently FOIA'd online. The whole toxics release inventory program is part of the Community Right to Know Act. So there's a long statutory history along with a kind of inculcation of agencies' culture in terms of transparency and openness and public engagement. So that's one thing that we wanted to build on and look at what else we're doing and what else we could do to improve that. And it goes even to recent events. EPA, along with the Department of Interior, are the co-leads for data.gov. And when you look at the volume of data sets provided to data.gov and the volume of downloads, EPA is generally towards the very top, which we're very proud of, that we're providing high quality and high value information, and the public seems to agree and is looking at that information. So that alone is something we're proud of, but we also want to build on that, look for new innovations and new opportunities.
So if someone, and it is, actually, I found it on the Open Government Plan, I guess it's on page 12, at least page 12 of 53 on the PDF. It's actually numbered page 6 on the page. But there are the things listed there for transparency, number of high-value data sets, freedom of information backlog, which we spoke about before, number of EPA electronic town hall meetings, I guess, you know, per year, things like that, are ways to measure, and these are simple ways, certainly, that they would give a general idea of the general effort. But of course, if someone had some ideas about some additional ones, where would they, how might they give those ideas to EPA and say, hey, how about measuring the number of things you do for this? How is there a place or channel to do that? Would that be on the ongoing idea scale or?
Idea scale or the public feedback tool is probably the best place to do it. We are still monitoring and looking at that information. It's still up. It's still viable. Also, folks may want to look at the appendix milestones on page 44 on the printed version of the document. Not sure what that would be in the PDF version, but towards the end there's a whole chart, and when you start looking at what those items are on the chart, you'll see additional output and outcome measures in there in terms of number of projects incorporating new Web 2.0 tools and outreach events and et cetera. So we started identifying different measures and ways that we could further transparency and measure them and allow the public to see how to measure them. But we'd welcome their suggestions and comments on what else we could look at and what else we could measure.
And correct me if I'm wrong, it's 180 days is the time frame for coming up with version 1.1 or whatever the next version is. Is that right? So that would be what,
yeah,
half a year from.
Yeah, we wanted to re-examine it every. Yeah, we want to periodically re-examine it. We'll be posting further information on the Open Government website, and if you've been using it or familiar with it, it does evolve over time. Even the Open Government website has had a couple of iterations in its very short span of being. So that's continually updated, and we provide additional information on what's going on of interest in the agency. Right,
so
now, there's a major banner on the.
So if someone was wanting to not miss a window, a particular window, I mean, even though it's still the IDEA platform is still open, some idea about, you know, using the regulatory type of thing. You know, here's the date that we would want to hear from you about your idea for improving the plan would be, you know, August 31st, or, you know, so they can at least make a note, okay, I need to do that by, I need to give them my sense of what, you know, by, is there a time frame that you know, no later than that, so you can issue a new iteration by 180 days? Or how is that going to be? How's that going to unfold?
You know, the plan's continually being reviewed, assessed, and adjusted. So there's not a specific hard timetable. I know OMB and the Open Government Directive has a 2-year timetable for the plans. You know, EPA took a slightly different look to do a faster cycle for its reviews and adjustments as needed. So I would just have them when they think of something good to assess and evaluate, they just let us know.
Yeah. Although I was kind of taken aback because the Office of OSTP, the Office of Science and Technology Policy, revised their plan within 2 weeks of issuing it, which is like light speed to revise something. Usually the standard is 30 days or 45 days. And all of a sudden, they can't, you know, they said, based on your feedback, we revised the plan. And I'm like, hey, I didn't know you were going to do it so quick. I would have given you some feedback right away if I knew what the time frame was. But so I guess I think they needed to be more clear about the fact that they were going to do that. But anyway, we're wrapping up the hour pretty quickly. I just want to make sure people remind people that. This is Open Government Radio. I'm Steve Buckley, and we're talking with John Moses from the EPA's Office of Environmental Information. So 90 seconds, the lady on the phone tells me. So is there anything else that I left out that you could wrap up in perhaps 30 seconds or so, as far as not wrap up, but that I didn't ask you or point people towards?
Well, we encourage folks to take a look at the Open Government website that we have for EPA, and that's www.epa.gov/open, and that's probably a great resource for folks to take a look at the plan, to take a look at new activities or innovations that we're spotlighting, and from there you'll find an easy access to our idea scale or the share your ideas portion of the site, and you can also access other related information that we've talked about, like regulations.gov or the FOIA program and all sorts of things like that. You know, we're here to support our mission and do it the best, most efficient, most transparent way we can, so we're always open to great suggestions from the public and encourage you to take a look at what we've done and give us your thoughts.
Well, thank you very much, John, for joining us today. Next week, we're having Eugene Huang from the White House Office of Science and Technology Policy. Hopefully, the program today provided the information for people to use to go forward. And I appreciate you coming, John. And we'll see everybody next week.
Thank you very much.
Thank you. Bye.